On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. There are good bosses, and then there are bad bosses. Not just bad, says business humorist Stanley Bing, but crazy bad. Crazy bosses, as the Fortune magazine columnist calls his new book. They come in many flavors, he says. The bully, the paranoid, the narcissist, the wimp. Often all rolled up in one high-paid, nasty package. It may just be, says Bing, that our new high-tilt economy is breeding pathology in the corner office. A contagion of kookiness, a fusion of flip-outs. Up next on Point, watch out below. Bad boy business guru Stanley Bing on Crazy Bosses. Joining me from New York is Stanley Bing. Since 1995, he's been a wise guy, humorist, and columnist for Fortune magazine. His books include the best-selling What Would Machiavelli Do?, Throwing the Elephant, and Sun Tzu Was a Sissy. His new book out next week is Crazy Bosses. And he's on the front lines, too. One of the worst-kept secrets in the biz is that behind his famous pen name, Stanley Bing is Gil Schwartz, Executive Vice President of Communications at CBS. Crazy Bosses is the book. Stanley Bing, welcome.
Hi, Tom.
Bad bosses, we've heard of them, but crazy?
Well, it's been my experience that most of the bosses that I've had over a 20-year career at one point or another have displayed signs of executive dementia. And since my own career is kind of a laboratory, I've watched myself develop those same symptoms, which means I must be doing pretty well.
Executive dementia, are bosses born crazy, or do they get that way somehow?
Well, you know, I think the experience of being bossed, in other words, having authority work on you, it reveals to every person just sort of how irrational the process is. And your question is a great one, because I think what happens is people start off, all of us start off with little kind of cracks and fissures in our personality. And then over time, under great pressure, that pressure functions to make the cracks grow wider and wider. And the worse the stress and pressure on people is, the bigger the job, in other words, the more political and operating pressures that the person is under, the more that those pressures will bring out whatever kind of bent thing there is in each one of us. Each one of us has those things that are wrong with us. And that makes each person crazy in a very specific way that's focused on just who they are. So in other words, one person under pressure may become a raging bully. Another person under that same pressure may become a cringing wimp. There's no way to tell how a person will get cracked, but eventually we all do crack.
So we'll look at those, but being boss, then you're saying, makes or may make people nuts. We thought it was all about, you know, huge paychecks and private jets and perks and good times.
Well, those things smooth over the craziness a little bit, but then you get used to those things, you know. And my experience is that while money does buy happiness at times, it doesn't really buy true contentment. I mean, people get very restive and bizarre when they get to the level where they're flying in corporate jets all the time. I think anybody who's been bossed by those people knows it. The other thing that's extremely important for people to understand is that no matter how big a person is, no matter how important an authority figure that person may be, they have a boss. Yeah. And they probably hate it even worse than you do, because their opinion of themselves and their view of themselves and their sort of projection of who they are in the universe is often at odds with the experience of being bossed themselves. So the experience of being bossed by increasingly crazy people as you go up the ladder makes people on that ladder themselves even crazier. And then, you know, as you know, things flow downhill.
We're gonna look at that hierarchy. But what do you think? I mean, you're out in that corporate world, and your famous cigar-toting profile is all over Fortune. That's the realm of big elephants. What portion of Americans, or at least in the realm of the country that you work in, do you think actually have a bad boss? Is this a piece of bad luck? It's the odd thing out. It's you know, unusual, and most of our good folks doing their best, or is it pervasive?
Well, what I think is we have to make a distinction between a crazy boss and a bad boss. Okay. I believe most crazy bosses can be really excellent. I mean, for example, I'm demented. I mean, I know that now, and I have a lot of people reporting to me, and I show a lot of the symptoms of narcissism and of paranoia, certainly. A lot of paranoia.
Yeah.
And I, at times, I guess I can yell too much. So I see all of these symptoms in myself, you know. But at the same time, I tell myself, and I think it's true, that I'm a pretty good boss. I try to be generous to people. I try to guide them. I try not to lose my temper, even though it's getting increasingly difficult, considering how I'm cracking up. But then there are bad bosses. There are just really stinky bosses. And a lot of the time, that just means that the person is crazy and bad. But I don't think just because a person's a crazy boss means we have to say they're a bad boss.
Okay.
I've had wonderful bosses that were just total wimps, and I remember them with great fondness.
So we're drawing fine distinctions here. Crazy boss may not be a bad boss, but though a bad boss could be crazy, a crazy mm-hmm. boss, you're saying, could be, in the end, a good boss, even though he mm-hmm. or she's nuts?
Absolutely, and you see how my mind is now working. After years on the job, this is what happens to a
crazy
person.
Is okay. Crazy,
exactly.
Crazy.
I believe. Look, here's what I think. I think that the majority of bosses are pretty good. Okay, but
yeah.
I also think 100% of all bosses above a certain level and possibly even below are already crazy. I may think actually that everybody's kind of crazy, and that being put in a position of authority very often exacerbates whatever problems you might have as an individual. You know, who's not nervous when they get up in the morning? But
right.
if what you're doing when you at 7 o'clock you have a meeting with a big corporation and you're out of your mind with anxiety, that makes you crazier. You know,
Stanley Bing, you work way up there in the New York echelons. Are you prepared to name names here to hold up particular high profile bosses, CEOs as exemplars of the kinds of madness you're describing?
Well, sometimes I do. It's becoming increasingly difficult, you know, for me.
Because you lunch with these people.
I do, and I like them to pick up the check. I had an experience I'll share with you a couple of years ago. One of these really massive bullies, a guy who was famous for scaring the pants off people, met with me for lunch, and I didn't know what the agenda was. And he said, I'd like to have lunch with you. And I said, okay. So we have lunch, and it's very lovely, and we have a lovely thing. And I think, gee, I'm sitting here with famous person, you know, somebody that I've actually made fun of quite a bit, come to think of it, over the years, and I wonder why we're having lunch. At the end of the lunch, he picks up the check, and he says to me, listen, do me a favor. I'm pretty sensitive, and you keep making fun of me. Would you stop? And I just said, you know what? Okay. So the fact that people know me at now in both my incarnations has made it difficult for me just to take pot shots at people. So I tend to now focus on ancient Rome.
that is too bad because, of course, these bosses are celebrities in our culture today. We've talked
about
a lot
of
them here.
I can certainly offer Donald Trump as an example of somebody who's got a narcissism issue, you know.
Everybody's whipping boy there. We've mm-hmm. talked with Carly Fiorina and Sandy Weill. I mean, they, you know, swinging no mean stick in their worlds mm-hmm. in their day, and people got all kinds of opinions about them. Stanley Bing is here. His book is Crazy Bosses. We've got another Stanley calling from Burlington, Vermont. Stanley in Vermont, you're on the air.
Yes, how are you?
Very well.
I remember, it was a lot of years ago, but I remember a guy, I didn't work for him. He wasn't even in my department, but he intruded. I was writing advertising, it doesn't matter. But he intruded in our department for whatever reason. And it was a woman, a wonderful, wonderful woman who I worked with. And this guy walks in one day, and he says, as soon as you finish sitting in Jerry's lap, And get this done. And I asked her afterwards, why is he so nasty? And she said, he wasn't nasty. He was a very, very nice guy. As soon as he got promoted, he became like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what.
Because he doesn't know how to. He doesn't know. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I think it's just the power becomes that nastiness, I think.
Well, what happens, I think, is that people are called upon who are comfortable in a subordinate role or in a serving, you know, being part of a team, are suddenly expected to be authority figures, and they don't really give lessons in that. You know, business schools focus a lot on other things, and people are promoted to the point where they're expected to know what to do and how to handle people. And, of course, they don't know any better than they did the day before they were promoted. So very often they themselves remember what it it was like to be treated that way as what authority means. So then they think they have to be nasty and sardonic and big jerks, and that explains, you know, why there were so many of them.
Did he blow up in the end, Stanley, in Burlington, Vermont, or did he turn?
No, as a matter of fact, he called me. I had to go into his office for something. And he was, I was in the retail clerks union at the time, which gave us some protection. And he said, I know you're in the union, but what I can do, in other words, threateningly, what I can do is cut your overtime. And, you know, I hate overtime. And I said, I'll tell you what, let's forget that I'm in the union. You just fire me, and you deal with my boss, who was a good guy. And he knew that wouldn't work. I didn't care. I didn't want to lose a job, but I knew he couldn't bring it off. But he used that threat. He used that threat of, I'm going to fire you because I don't like the way you're whatever. You know, I don't know what his routine was.
Out of the lap and back to work, and it looked like a nutty boss to you. Stanley in Vermont, thanks for calling. Stanley Bing, I mean, you know, we just begin to hear, and people are lining up, but everybody's got these stories. Perry's calling from Boston. Hi, Perry, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you today?
We're good. What do you know?
I was actually driving with the dogs and trying to keep them quiet right now, but I had to call in because I had quite an interesting experience this year, at the beginning of this year. For the first time in my many year and many job life, I ran into something I'd never considered before. I started at a small software company around the beginning of the year, and I realized pretty soon that it just wasn't working out for me, the schedule wasn't right, it was a nice company, people were great and everything, but I went in at the five-week point. I went in one night late around 6 or 7 o'clock to give my the CEO, because it's such a small company, my notice. And he had been this, he's a very creative person and very welcoming. Every week he would ask me, are you happy? And he turned into this crazy person and really went off on me. How can you leave us? We have so much potential for you. And then how much notice are you going to give when he finally calmed down a little bit? And I said, you know, 2 weeks. I've been here 5 weeks. 2 weeks? I need 3 months' notice.
5 weeks in, 3 months to get out.
3 months.
Yeah.
And the funny thing was, even funnier than that, afterwards, I extricated myself from the office rather quickly, and there happened to be a few people still around, and I went to speak to somebody and tell them about it, and they said, ooh, we should have mentioned that he might do that if you were to cross him.
And presumably, you were gone. You were out with I'm guessing, no 3 months.
You know, no 3 months, and I had a very, very hard time getting through those 2 weeks because initially he came in every day to my office to try and convince me of some other way to make it work, and then he shunned me.
Hey, maybe you should feel love until you weren't. Perry, thanks for calling.
Thanks so much.
Stanley Bing, take us through, I wish you would, these crazy types that you outline here. You begin to talk about the bully.
You see something here in her story is fascinating because what you see in that is both a bullying personality. Yep. In other words, maybe yelling will get me what I want. Mm-hmm. And also a narcissistic personality because the narcissist believes that the world revolves around him or her. And anything that goes wrong is a disconnect. In other words, it kicks off a weird thing. How can this be happening to me? It doesn't feel to the narcissist like that the caller, you know, sort of has a life and may not want to do. They don't see the other person as being real. They see them as being a projection of themselves and their needs. So when things go off the rails a little bit, that person doesn't know how to deal with things. That person immediately defaults to an infantile reaction, which is what happens with crazy bosses, is that they don't know what to do and they become the way probably they dealt with things when they were little kids. Scream, yell, pound your feet, threaten, sometimes cry, you know, all the things that little children do, you will notice in a freaked out crazy boss.
So you say, think here, Ted Turner, Donald Trump, Louis the 14th. Is there something about the responsibility that comes with being the boss that makes people think, I've got to use everything in my closet, even if it seems over the top or nuts or too emotional or, you know, too around the bend?
Too much. Yeah, I think that's true. I think they will resort. There's another quality there of resorting to like a nuclear weapon when a BB gun will do.
Right.
You know.
Right.
And I do think that guys like, you know, Woody Hayes, who used to be a great coach at Ohio State, who like punched an opposing player when the guy made a good play, or remember Bobby Knight, who used to throw chairs at basketball games and stuff. These guys, you know, it's really an issue of controlling the world. If you think about what our caller said, he was perfectly fine as long as the woman was in his control. It would fit into his scheme of things. Mm-hmm. The minute that she broke his control of the situation, then he flipped out. And there's also quality in the current workplace now, I think, of being very high stakes. When everything is perched just so, then it's okay. Things are going to be okay. But the minute that things teeter a little bit, they really aren't okay. Things go really bad in a hurry. We're not living in a place where, you know, we have to worry in 3 months whether the crops are going to come in.
Right.
Everything is like within 5 minutes there could be 40 wire stories, or we could suddenly miss a number. Or, and the tremendous pressure on people makes them loony. And this guy, you know, our caller, like, thought she knew the person. And then all of a sudden this Mr. Hyde thing takes place, and he turns into a raving, steaming lunatic.
So the bully goes narcissist, life on that razor's edge could well bring out another one of your types, the paranoid boss.
Oh, yeah. Well, paranoia, you know. You know what? Andy Grove, the head of Intel, is a brilliant guy, and he once said that the, that the best stance against competition and in the world of business is basically enlightened paranoia. Yeah.
Be paranoid.
Be paranoid, because that's a rational reaction to the way things are. There is a difference between sort of being on edge and being prepared, though, and being a really paranoid person. Paranoid people are very, very nervous all the time.
Even bosses, even when they've got the title and the pay package?
Hey, you know.
Especially bosses. What?
Yeah, especially. But what's it? Living well means having nothing left to lose. What's that? That Bobby McGee was about the whole idea of having a lot to lose really makes you very nervous.
Mm-hmm.
And these people who are at the top of the food chain have a heck of a lot to lose. When you think about how much of their compensation is tied into long-term ways of paying people, you can go out the door and you can be hurt. And more than that, losing status is a tremendous thing to people who have a lot of power and a lot of status. You know, getting a good table at a restaurant very often becomes more important than actually what you're being paid.
So a lot to be paranoid about, and then the status, sensitivity, thin skin that comes with that. You look at Richard III, Richard Nixon, Martha Stewart in this category, really? She, ex-con, tough gal now?
Well, she, you know, it's interesting about her. I mean, she divided the world into, at some point when she was in trouble, when she was under all that stress, she divided the world between people who were sort of for her and against her. And she displays a lot of the characteristics in every one of these chapters. I mean, if you think about her paranoid reaction to being, you know, to being under assault, which is somewhat justified, but also not listening to advisors, which is kind of a narcissistic trait. And also, you know, I mean, admittedly, not really being completely forthright with the federal government fits into the last chapter of the book. I mean, if that isn't disaster hunting, then I don't know what is.
Looking for disaster. Stanley Bing's new book is Crazy Bosses. Let's take a call from Santa Cruz, California. Jeff, you're on the air with Stanley Bing.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
Question for Stanley. I'm a crazy boss calling in.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that madness was contributed from a book I read some time ago, What Would Machiavelli Do?
That's Stanley Bing's book. It made you crazy?
That's good.
Thank
you, Jeff.
It was my inspiration to the madness. Yeah, you're welcome. I love that book. And as a quick aside, I have two business books that I consider bookends for any business person. One is The Heart Aroused by White, and then your book on the other end. Good, thank you. Compare and contrast.
We should have the full title on that so people can see where the crazy may come from. What Would Machiavelli Do? :, the ends justify the meanness. Did it make
meanness.
You into a tyrant, mean guy, Jeff?
You know what? In all honesty, it helped to watch out for some of the things that you're talking about today.
Mm-hmm.
An extremely satirical book. One of the few books that I spent a lot of time laughing in little chunks. But really, what was a good opportunity was to see when you were beginning to tip over into the edge of madness.
Well, that's that. Right. That really warms the cockles of my heart, you know, or what's left of my heart, you know, because when I do these, I do these books. I'm sorry, Jeff.
I'm sorry, the little toad inside of you.
Little teeny toad
inside of myself. Well, I, you know, I really do write these books hoping that some bosses will read them and get a laugh out of it and recognize themselves a little bit. I mean, a little knowledge is sometimes not only a dangerous thing, you know.
Jeff, you don't sound so tortured. If you're a crazy boss, are we sensing that you like being a crazy boss?
Well, hey, you know, we're all human beings, and I think you really Stanley hit it on the head with you know, it just brings out, it amplifies all of our traits. And, you know, you just got to try and be conscious of it and get through it.
Do you find yourself going around the bend, you know, going off on your employees? Or are you crazy in the paranoid way or the wimp way?
Oh, certainly. I mean, certainly, you know, I have issues with, you know, sometimes trying to stay calm, you know, anger. Mm-hmm. You know, most of the people that wind up in positions of leadership are, you know, impatient or paranoid, like you've been talking about. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, to try and keep that in check is not always easy, especially under a big stress
load. And you know, it is kind of fun to go crazy now and then, you know. I mean, when, you know, how many times in your life as a child are you permitted to just completely lose your head and
let it rip,
start screaming at people?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And you know, something, Stanley, that's the beauty, I think, of your What Would Machiavelli Do? It's kind of that little twisted boy, I'd really love to act this way every day.
And now you're the boss, so you can do it. Well, good for you. I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. Jeff in Santa Cruz, thanks for calling. Let's get
now,
one.
Jeff
from...
has the benefit also of, of being in Santa Cruz, by the way.
You know? What? So we can go take a dip in the sea when it gets too hot, or just
it's
being there. Period.
There. It is much harder to be a tyrant and a crazy boss in Northern California than anywhere else. I think.
Right. He carries it well in that environment. Let's take a call from Franklin, Massachusetts, the other side of the continent. Jim, you're on the air.
Yeah, Tom, thank you for taking the call.
Yeah.
I'd like to pose a little scenario that occurred to me early in my career as a business analyst, and I think this buttresses against the tyrant theme that you were just talking about. True story here, almost unbelievable, but true. We came out of a business meeting, and the general manager of the division of about 800 employees in this particular division came out with us, and the elevators just happened to break at that moment.
Okay.
And there were a number of employees stuck on the elevators. And this guy asked the general manager in a very real tone. He was absolutely serious. He wanted to know if those people were punched out yet or not for lunch. And he didn't mean in a way to punch them back in. True story. Waiting for the fire department, he wanted to know if those people had been punched out yet or not.
With the fire department's coming to fix the elevator, and he's worried about whether they've punched the clock.
Now, exactly. So where does this person fit on the tyrant spectrum?
Stanley Bang?
Well, talk about a narcissistic personality. My goodness, you know, this guy is like has absolutely zero empathy for other people. All he's thinking about is his time clock, you know?
Are they fitting into my format? Jim, thanks for that. What about the wimp? How does that fit in here? So far we're not hearing much of boss as wimp. Is wimp just ineffectual, or is wimp also a kind of corporate madness?
It is. It's a tremendous madness. And actually, the good news about wimpishness is that it's very easy. It's much easier than to control a wimp than it is to control a bully for subordinates.
Mm-hmm.
The wimp is a person who is obsessed with detail, who has difficulty making decisions, being decisive, having accountability for decisions, who's in love with committees, who will very often hire consultants to insulate him or her from the implications of having made a decision, is extremely slow-moving and ponderous.
These people become bosses?
Japan is run by such people.
Well, I guess they haven't done so bad historically. The 90s
no, they
so
haven't
great,
because
maybe the wimp is good then.
You know what? I'm a fan of wimpishness within reason because I tend to like bureaucracy, process, things that mitigate somewhat the huge personalities that are involved with being bullies or narcissists or paranoids. But wimps can be extremely frustrating to work with and for when you need to get anything done. And they're also a little shifty in the sense that a wimp will wait for 3 months, let you make the decision, have you do all the work, and then suddenly it's the wimp's name on top of the project, and the wimp is is getting the credit, and that's how they become bosses. They're canny, they're highly political, and they know how to manipulate the system. They're just a different kind of craziness. And by the way, you know, as I said before, nobody stays any one thing. If you get a wimp very, very angry, you'll see permutations and colors within that wimpishness that reminds you of many other types of bullies.
So it all gets blended together here, kind of.
It's a beautiful rainbow rainbow effect.
Bully, paranoid, narcissist, wimp, depending on the day. And then you've got your disaster hunter. What do you mean by that? Boss as crazy boss as disaster hunter.
Well, I believe that at the end process, you know, when we're talking with Jim or with Jeff out in Santa Cruz, you know, the end for all of us, we have an executive shelf life, is how I see things. And at the end, we kind of all rot and have to be removed from the grocery store of business, you know. And ultimately, these crazy bosses do try to get out of the pain that they feel on a daily basis by torpedoing themselves. I mean, if you look at, you know, you're talking about Carly Fiorina of Hewlett-Packard. She'd made a lot of moves to alienate the people that she needed to have as allies, and then she was out, you know. And if you look at one of the great disaster hunters of all time was a guy who I think was a very effective executive in many ways, Bill Clinton, who, because of his personal drive of of a certain kind, gave his enemies the ammo that they needed to bring him down.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the nutty boss in the corner office with business humorist Stanley Bing. His new book is Crazy Bosses. You've got bosses. We've got questions. Are you being driven crazy by a crazy boss? What's your survival strategy? We're at 800-423-8255. 800-423-TALK. In an old Saturday Night Live skit with Will Ferrell and Pierce Brosnan, Will Ferrell plays a very crazy boss. In this scene, he's just hired Pierce Brosnan for a job when another employee dares to interrupt.
So what do you think?
I think I want the job.
Fantastic.
Oh, excellent.
Great. So we'll give you a pass key and assign you a desk and a parking space.
Excuse me, Mr. Tarkanian?
Why are you interrupting me?
Well, I just thought that you...
You've thought? You've thought? You do not interrupt me when I am busy. Do you understand me? I do not want you to pull this amateur bull crap, all right? I am a professional. Do you hear me? Do you understand me?
Yes, Mr. Tarkanian.
All hail the boss. Says Andipa in Columbia, South Carolina. You're on the air with Stanley Bing.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
I had two comments. What role of being insecure in the position of being a boss, like if you don't know how to do the certain activities of your responsibilities and this, will that turn into a person into a controlling boss?
If you don't know what you're doing, okay, yeah.
And the other thing is you were okay, boss, and all of a sudden, due to some circumstances, your ego gets crushed. And that kind of changes your whole personality all of a sudden, and you become entirely a different boss. I mean,
so maybe bad bosses or crazy bosses have had crazy bosses themselves, and they're just passing it on.
Yeah, just they're kind of rolling, you know, down the line there. That right. you're just creating a different kind of atmosphere. There.
Right. Rolling madness. Stanley, what do you say?
Well, I think that's a brilliant. Both questions are observations are very insightful. I mean, first of all, bosses a lot of the time don't know what they're doing because a lot of the time none of us know what we're doing, and that creates, you know, the tension between not knowing what to do and having to appear to know what you're doing is tremendous, and it does lead people to be, you know, appear overly confident and really they should listen more. I mean, it does lead to character distortions, and certainly, you know, as I said, everyone has a boss, no matter how big they are, and as you get bigger and bigger up the food chain, your bosses get worse and worse, and probably so do you. But it doesn't need to be in like the corner office or the big time person. I mean, you know, people who are work in academia or even in radio stations know that you don't have to be a huge boss in order to terrorize people. So, yes, if a person's ego gets damaged, it can make them go fly off in all kinds of directions, depending on how they're bent in the first place, I think.
In your other life, you're pretty high up there at CBS. If the bosses get worse, the higher they get, how on earth do you survive in that environment? Stanley Bing, a.k.a. Gil Schwartz of CBS.
I'm having fun. I mean, I don't know.
Armor up, baby.
I will tell you that, you know, it's weird, but when the stakes get high and the tension, you become a kind of a junkie for the thrill of skating close to the edge of the volcano, and you kind of miss it. I don't know what I would do if I suddenly had to go into organic farming. You know,
we're all in the roller derby now, up at that tier. Great. Watch out for the flying elbow. Let's take a call from Salem, New Hampshire. Brian, you're on the air with Stanley Bing.
Hi, Tom. Stanley. How you doing?
Good.
Hi.
I had a boss who thought everything was a confrontation, and everything turned into a screaming match, including his wonderful open door reviews where he would scream out everything that was wrong with you.
What a jerk.
What a picture.
It was wonderful. So he got fired after a while. Luckily, we survived by just trying to avoid him, everybody in the office. So several years later, a guy who worked with me, Bob, says he's going to leave. And I said, good luck and everything. You know, I'm sorry to lose you. And I said, where are you going? And he tells me his company, and he names Mr. X. I said, oh, like, Bob, I beg you, please. This is a big, big mistake. Do not do this. He said, no, I'm going through a divorce. I want to make a clean break. Another state. No, I'm leaving. That's it. End of discussion. So a year and a half later, I run into Bob. He says, oh, hi, Brian. How you doing? I said, hey, Bob, how you doing? How are things going? He said, oh, I just quit. And he said, you were totally wrong about Mr. X. I was wrong? And he says, yes, he was much worse than anything you described. That was a real joy.
Right. Anyway. It sounds like you survived. Everybody talks about the bosses at the top and keeps those stories going for years. Brian, thanks for that. Let's go to Virginia Beach, Virginia, and Bill. Hi, Bill, you're on the air.
Hey, great topic. I was thinking about a previous job where I was at a meeting that was like Dilbert, where one of the bosses in the meeting used his finger as sort of like a phallic penis, pointing himself at different people, blaming things on them, but then he denied any responsibility. I came out of that thinking that when I was younger, I wanted to be an adult, but here I am at meetings where people were just as childish as they probably were when they were kids, which brought up the idea of nature versus nurture. Do you have any perception about whether or not these bullies or the wimps or the narcissists were like that when they were kids in school and they just didn't happen to have weapons at the time?
Straight from the diaper to the boardroom, what do you say?
I personally believe in a mixture of nature and nurture. What I think is that that also an important point here is that organizations select out in a Darwinian sense, like a sort of survival of the fittest, the kid who is the mean bully on the playground that nobody likes, that doesn't really get along with other people. They're seen as an aberration in school and they go to the guidance counselor. In business, they get promoted. The very character that makes people unpopular and difficult to deal with in the, quote, real world actually suits them very well to be managers. They are tough. They don't listen to other people. They move fast. They don't have second thoughts about themselves. They're very wrapped up in their own needs and their forward momentum. These are all things that that make a promotable person in the business universe, which means so part of that is the nature of the business universe. And then, you know, the nurture part of it is that people kind of start out a certain way, and then depending on the organization and how the organization plays on their own weaknesses and crazinesses, which we all have, then that person gets kind of warped in whatever way that interchange goes. But I do think it's both.
Jerks as winners for themselves, but also as winners for their companies, for our economy? Like, jerks make the world go round? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, not maybe jerks, but people who don't have second thoughts about themselves that much. In other words, self-doubting people don't really make very good anything except maybe poets or writers of fiction. But in terms of the way the world works, it's people who march straight forward and don't say, why am I doing this and why am I thinking? I think internal contemplation and self-doubt doesn't suit itself very well to a managerial career or to bossing other people around. I do think that a lot of the yelling that we're hearing described today has to do with people who are very nervous about being an authority, too.
And yet they've got it. There's Stanley Bing's world. Let's get a call from New York City. Carrie, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I wanted to call and just say that my boss is crazy.
Oh, just how crazy?
He'll interrupt you. Doesn't matter if you're talking, like I was talking with a client on the phone yesterday, and he interrupted me. He needed something right now that didn't, you know, wasn't a priority. He doesn't say thank you. He's, if he wants something, he'll interrupt you no matter what. And he's did it to another colleague of mine yesterday.
Can he hear you right now, Carrie? Is he going to walk in on this conversation?
Maybe, yeah. I'm calling from work right now because I just had to, and he might very well walk in on this conversation. But
how's your productivity today, Carrie?
Our productivity is pretty good. Usually when he is extremely rude, it just makes me and my two colleagues just all furious. And the way that we deal with it is just, you know, we just sort of take a break and come back, and it's almost like you don't matter. Like, you have to just respond, you know, right away. It doesn't matter. And
it's even worse than that, actually. It's there is no real you. I mean,
yeah,
it's
that's
just,
right. There is no real you.
No, you're just a function, and that function, he needs something right now. But you see how babyish that is? It's like a little baby. A little baby wants to be changed. A little baby wants the bottle.
Yeah, that's
you know,
it.
You don't wait for that. You cry.
Do you think that that's that category that you were saying, that those people are the bullies are? Well, sometimes when we sort of bounce back towards him, he's a little bit more calm for a minute. Is
so you can
yes,
push back and he'll back down a little bit, you know?
Bullies require control. Bullies require more control than any other single category. But it's tough. It's hard. You need to have some guts and know. And people who are really, really far gone in terms of being bullies, it's a myth that they prefer to be pushed back. They'll just throw you out the window.
And your fury, Carrie, you and your workmates, what do you do with that fury?
We usually fume at each other. We look at each other and just fume. Sometimes we have to walk out of the room. I mean, it's just... Sometimes I get into altercations when I can't control myself. It always gets worse because, like, one time he asked me to do something that I'm just not very good at. I just do clerical tasks, and he asked me to, you know, add up some numbers, and I said, you know, this isn't my strong suit. And he said, I can't get Carrie to do any work for me today, and stormed all around the office. Like,
sounds
Carrie
like
won't do anything for me today.
You may be a guy, but it sounds like your devil's wearing Prada there in New York. Carrie, thanks for that. Let's go to Norfolk, Virginia. Mary Beth, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you.
Certainly.
Well, I have missed some of the show, but I far prefer and would have preferred over the 19 years that I spent working in an organization a yelling crazy boss rather than someone who undermines and undercuts, is a control freak and a micromanaging tyrant. I would far prefer that yelling crazy boss to that which I've just described.
So let him yell and be all up front about whatever he or she thinks rather than what's kind of skulking around, stabbing you from the side.
Exactly. I mean, I listened to this boss I had undercut and undermine other people in management in the organization. And, you know, now that I've left the organization, I wish to God I had said, this is not the way to direct this organization. Please, please, can we be upfront with each other rather than all of this backstabbing and...
Even if that meant yelling. Stanley, what do you say?
Well, it's fascinating. I mean, that's a paranoid personality and a bit of a wimp, too, who goes behind people's backs to stab things and is actually more comfortable when people are at odds with each other rather than, you know, coming back at him. I think it's a sad thing, but I do think, Mary Beth, you should not be upset that you never said anything, because even if you said something, I don't know that it would have done a whole heck of a lot of good. I think people are compulsive and driven to do things the way that their psyche tells them to. I don't think that crazy bosses, any more than other crazy people, have that much control over the way that the craziness is expressed. But you're describing a person who is really dysfunctional and probably a terrible boss. And I'll bet, you know, after a while, the organization begins to suffer from somebody like that because he can't keep people happy. And ultimately, even a yelling person, if they also give love back in other ways, can keep an organization happy.
Let's try and get a couple more calls. We've got another boss calling in, Joe, in Newport News, Virginia. Hello, Boss Joe. How's it going?
Oh, it's going well. I've spent over 35 years, mostly in retail, in middle to upper middle management.
Yeah.
of all sorts of companies, large three-level department stores and furniture operations. And what I've found is I'm a very popular boss. I opened a new store, needed 47 employees, and 24 prior employees left employment and came to work for me.
Wow, you're the man.
Upper management hates it. I mean, they distrust it. They feel that it's...
Well, your popularity makes your boss nervous?
Yeah.
Why?
It always has. They see it as being too pro-employee, I guess. I don't know. It's always held me back. They feel that I'm not tough enough with the employees, and that's why...
Do you produce the numbers with your popularity?
The numbers, once in a while in the very top 2%, never below 20% from the top of any job I've held.
Hey, Stanley, it sounds like the ideal boss, and his bosses don't like him. What's up with that?
Well, it just sounds to me like Joe is a good boss and belongs in upper middle management, but he's simply not crazy enough to be in the top echelon.
Sorry, Joe, but...
neither am I. I mean, I can't be like the big behemoths that I see lunching at the really big tables at Four Seasons and stuff. I mean, at some point when somebody says, I don't feel well, I want to go home, I don't say to them, shut up and go back to work. You know, I mean, I don't have that muscle. And it sounds to me like Joe is a good guy to work for and may have his quirks, but it's just he doesn't have the mean streak, I think, that he's going to need to really get up there.
So when Les Moonves, chairman at CBS, when he leans, does he smack you around and you say, oh, I love my boss because he's a big bull elephant at the table?
Listen, I'm just going to make you nauseous here, but I love my boss. I do. And it's not because, by the way, it's not because he's like, you know, Mother Teresa, but he's a good guy and we've known each other for 12 years and we know each other's craziness pretty well.
So Stanley Bing, in your profile shot there in Fortune, you've always got that big cigar. Is that part of your boss persona too? Does that keep the troops in line when you wave the cigar in the corner office?
That's actually part of my fictional persona. I have a cigar because it's kind of a branding thing, but my wife made me quit about 5 years ago, and so I brandish it, but I don't dare smoke it.
but the brand matters. Where do you think we're headed? Are we going to tougher, crazier bosses? Does the global economy make us get even wilder up the wacky scale, or is there some leavening ultimately here? What?
You know, I actually think it's pretty consistent over the thousands of years of human history. You know, I mean, person who worked for Augustus or for Genghis Khan probably had some of the same problems as Mary Beth and Jim. You know, I don't think it's getting worse exponentially, but I do think that the pace and pressure of contemporary business right now is probably making craziness appear more throughout the entire structure of a company, where it used to be that maybe just the top couple percent of senior managers were crazy. I think it may be necessary to be crazy all the way down to the level of, you know, manager at this point.
So line up, craziness waiting for you. Mm-hmm. Stanley Bing, it's been a pretty good kind of office therapy session here, and we're grateful for it.
I feel better.
Oh, I feel much better. I don't know about my boss, but I'll find out. You too. Stanley Bing's new book is Crazy Bosses. Great to have you with us. We'll read you in the pages of Fortune. Thanks for everything. Thanks for joining
us. Thanks so much. I really had a good time.
Stanley Bing joined us from New York. You can continue this conversation and download the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Can't understand how we can afford a ticket to the promised land. Now 9 to 5 won't get it done. With your pension drain and a water fund. They got your nose to the stone and your back to the wall.